Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I am your host, John Scott. Thank you for joining us today. It's August 25th. Nice little Tuesday morning episode. I appreciate everybody joining me. I've been up in Northport for the last couple of days, taking a little vacation with my family. Well, a little week. It's kind of a tradition. I bring the kids and the wife. We do a birthday party. Me and my wife do my anniversary. We've been married for 18 years now, if you can believe that. We had our anniversary yesterday. We have a tradition of kind of going to a certain restaurant, getting some nice food. I do a little drink. She does a little drink. We have some fun. And it's a good time. I actually come up with a little hack I was teaching my kids yesterday. And feel free to take this information and use with it if you will. But I'm tired of, I don't know about you, but when you go out to eat, everything's just very expensive these days. So when we go to a restaurant, I look at the appetizers and the prices and I go, this is insane. I'm not getting a calamari or a tuna crudo, whatever you call it, or a little burrata salad or chicken wings or nachos or whatever the appetizer is. It seems like it's the same price as an entree these days. So we went to this restaurant, very fancy, very nice, Riverside Inn in Leland, Michigan. Super, super nice restaurant. The appetizers were $22, $25. And I was like, I can't bring myself to pay that much for an appetizer, even though, you know, maybe I could afford it. It's a special occasion. I want to, you know, treat my wife and, you know, go all out. I still can't bring myself to pay that much money for an appetizer. So what I do is, and I've been doing this for a long time and it seems to work, is I just get an entree. And I do that as an appetizer, whether it's a pizza, whether it's, you know, a full nacho plate or whatever you have. But last night we had a bolognese pasta appetizer. You know, the waitress was a little shocked. She said, appetizers? Yeah, you know, we got the bread. Very good. And I said, look, we're going to do a bolognese as an appetizer. She went with it, got the plate of pasta. It was delicious. We split it. It was fantastic. And that's kind of what they do in Italy. I don't know who's been to Italy, but the meal is broken down into kind of portions, into steps. It's like a journey. The first course is salad. Second course is like a meat. Third course is pasta. Fourth course is fish. Fifth course is a veggie. Sixth course is dessert. Seventh course is, I think, is an aperitif. Or, no, what's that called? It's like an Italian booze that they give near the end. So we kind of did that in our own way. I had a little whiskey Weller Reserve to start. Then I went to a bolognese and we had some bread. Then I got a nice roasted chicken. And for dessert, we just had some chocolate at home. I don't know. I'm not a big dessert guy. But I don't know, a little hack for you. I know we don't give you much, but take that with you. When you go to a restaurant, instead of getting an appetizer, get an entree. It's more food. It's better. And you can share it with your friends or your family or just eat it yourself, you filthy animal. I don't know. I've been known to order two entrees at a dinner. It was my go-to move when I played hockey. Got to get those calories in. But all that aside, I've been up in Northport. I went to Minnesota last week for the Beauty League. It was the last year for that tournament. And what it was, my agent put on this tournament for the local community in Braemar, just kind of outside of Minnesota where you would have professional players. He would just play 4-on-4, 3-on-3, 5-on-5. It's kind of bounced around throughout the years, and you would charge $5 admission for fans to come and watch. And it was a great event. You get these NHL players playing summer league, a little more relaxed, a little more fun. And as a fan, you can pay $5 and you can go and watch the likes of, gosh, it started off with me and Dustin Byfuglien and Parisi and Drew Stafford and all these guys, and it progressed. There's Goligoski, there's Brock Besser, there's Brock Nelson, there's Nate Schmidt. There's all of these guys, like very, very good NHL players throughout the years. And I've been associated with it because when I retired, my agent, they called the trophy the John Scott Cup. Very nice honor. So every couple of years, I go out and say hello and shake some hands and kiss some babies and do some autographs and whatever. And this week was the last game of the Beauty League. Just because my agent, honestly, he's tired of doing it. He was telling me he has to text 100 guys a week to try to make sure rosters are full. We have goalies, we have refs, we have everything that goes along with running a pseudo league every single week for a decade. And they made almost just south of $1 million. I think they made $800,000 over the course of 10 years that they all donated to charity. They did it, you know, out of the kindness of their heart. They didn't make a dime on this. Yeah, they might have signed a player here and there, but so they had me in. It was a good trip. I got to just be around all the guys again. And the NHL players kind of had waned off. I think that's why maybe they are stopping the league a little bit, because they're not getting the NHL caliber players for this league. They come later on for the pro camp to gear up for training camp. But a great group. They had Bobby Brink was there. They had Freddie Gaudreau. They had Justin Hall, one of my all-time favorites. You know that from the Detroit Red Wings. And a few other guys. They had the women's team there. They had a lot of Olympians, gold medal Olympians there playing. So that was fantastic. And, you know, I left there feeling good. I brought my wife. It was a good trip. But one thing I did notice, and this is what the focus of this podcast is going to be. So I go into this rink. And, you know, I was driving my agent's truck. He's like, here, take my truck for the day. I only went in for the day. And he's like, you know, come from the hotel. I'll see you at the rink. So I'm driving into the rink. And the place is packed, absolutely jam-packed. And I'm looking at the cars in the parking lot. And, you know, this is just a normal Wednesday evening. It was like 5 p.m. start time. And it was Grand Wagoneer. It was Range Rover. It was Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Audi, you know, Denali, massive pickup truck, all brand new cars from the looks of it. And, you know, I asked my wife, I go, like, are we the only people in the world who, like, don't have a fancy car that's worth $80,000, $90,000, $100,000? It's crazy to me. And we go up and down the rows of these, you know, of this parking lot. And I kid you not, it's just everybody has a high-end car. And then it just got me thinking, because I had a nice lunch with my agent. And I've known him for, gosh, 25 years now, 30 years. He picked me up right out of Michigan Tech when I was a sophomore, junior. And I've been just riding with him forever since. He's been a great agent, great friend, great guy. Ben Hankinson for Octagon Hockey. And I was just kind of picking his brain, like, how has hockey changed? Because he's been in it for a long time. He was a pro hockey player in the New Jersey Devils system. Kind of didn't, I don't know if he got injured, but it just didn't really work out, transitioned into the agency. And he's been a very, very successful agent. He has some high-end guys. He got Jake Gensel, Ryan McDonough. He's had some really, really good players, Brock Nelson. Anyways, we just got to chatting. We were eating at Sandy's bar. I always get a couple burgers and a beer, just hanging out before the big night we had ahead. And it was almost a sad state of hockey that is Minnesota these days. Because when you think of Minnesota, I know we have a lot of Canadian listeners, but Minnesota, their claim to fame is of the state of hockey. You know, they got the great high school hockey tradition. They got the mullets. They got the hockey hair, the flow. They have, you know, the Minnesota Wild. They produce the most hockey players that go to the NHL. I think it's Minnesota and Michigan are the top two states. But he got to talking about how he recruits players, because I'm always fascinated, because he has to compete with all these big agencies, you know, the AAAs of the world, the Newports, like huge agencies that rep like LeBron James and all these other athletes. And they have all of that influence to go along to, you know, get players. And the same goes for the podcast world. It's like Spit and Chicklets. They have so many people getting interviews for them and so much cachet and so many sponsors. They can go out and get anybody. And then a show like mine, I'm not complaining, but we're very, very small. And I liken that to, you know, the Octagon Hockey world versus a huge juggernaut like AAA, where the AAA, they can offer private jets and this and that and the other thing. Like, what can Octagon offer? So I start talking with him. I go, well, how do you do your recruitment? Because when he recruited me, I was in college. That's typically how it's done. And he said, no, not anymore. I was like, well, you get him, you know, senior year of high school, junior year of high school. You can see the progression. You can see how good they are. And he goes, no, John, things have changed dramatically over the last 10 years. He's like, now agents are scouting and signing and advising players who are 12, 13 years old. And it caught me off guard, because the idea of an agent or someone who is trying to scout the talent being able to pick a player out of a team at 12, 13 years old, it's almost impossible. And I asked him, I said, well, what do you do? You just sign a bunch of kids and hopefully one of them hits? And he goes, yeah, pretty much that's it. He said, we can't wait anymore. I would love to wait until they get to, you know, 16, 17, 18. So I know what I'm working with and I can build a relationship with them and build this repertoire. But I can't. If I do that, I sign nobody. So you either have to feed into the madness and play their game, or you die. And so you have to play their game. And so he says he goes around the state of Minnesota and he scouts these kids and he will go and approach 12 and 13 year old kids and their parents, which to me is insane. I have a 14 year old. I have a 12 year old. I have two 10 year olds. I couldn't tell you for the life of me what they will be when they're 18 years old. I have ideas. I know which ones are better at certain things, but to be able to pluck a kid out of a certain situation at 12 years old and say, okay, I'm going to put all my eggs in your basket. That's insane to me. And he says, that's what they do. And what makes it even more insane is he's like, these kids and these families, now they have advisors. So they have people that their sole job is to guide these players and to find certain agencies and certain teams and certain situations. So you're always improving. You're always, you know, moving forward. And I said, well, what do you mean moving teams, moving cities? And he said, well, yeah. Like, it's very rare you find a kid that stays in the same program on the same team throughout his whole career. And career is a loose term at that age because you're 12, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. And that like really caught me off guard because I'm sure all of you can kind of relate. When I was a kid, those of you who played somewhat competitive hockey, I started when I was 6 or 7 or 8 years old. I started playing travel hockey in St. Catharines, Ontario, AAA. I was lucky enough to make the team. And you meet the kids you're playing with, 20 kids, 22 kids. And you build this relationship. You have friends. You have, you know, common interests. And you play hockey and you play the season. Then you see the same kids the next year. Whether it's, you know, novice and peewees and bantams and midgets all the way up. And you play with these kids for 2 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years. And you build friendships and you build this environment and this culture because everybody's in it together. And I can't see a world where I would want to bounce around and say, oh yeah, you know what? That team over there, you know, in St. Catharines, and it happened to one kid, Chris Romanesco. He left the St. Catharines Royals and he went and played for the Mississauga Reps because he thought, well, he didn't think the Mississauga Reps were better. And his parents said, okay, well, Chris is the best player on this team. I think it was novice, major novice, maybe minor peewee. So we were probably 12, 13 years old. And his parents said, we're taking Chris and we're going to the Mississauga Reps. Well, lo and behold, he goes to the Reps and he went from being one of the best players on a decent team to being one of the worst players on a really good team. So his ice time got cut, his development stunted, and he didn't go anywhere. And then you're stuck in this situation where you can't go back because you left this organization, you left the city, St. Catharines, high and dry, to go to a better situation. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see my air quotes, because is it a better situation? A bigger city, you know, obviously more opportunity, but you're not playing. And you're full of just parents and kids who are trying to do the same thing you're doing. They want to go to a bigger city. They want to go to a better situation. They want to have better competition. Iron sharpens iron, all that stuff. So then he flames up. And then we stay in St. Catharines. And all of a sudden, 2, 3, 4 guys on my team end up getting scholarships, end up going to the, you know, OHL and having pretty good careers. And I look back at Chris. He was the best player on our team for years. Chris Romanesco. I'm like, what could have been if he would have just stayed? And aside from that, arguably, probably realistically, on any given team throughout the country, throughout the world, maybe one kid makes it. Maybe. Unless you're like on a superstar team in Toronto when you got, you know, what was that one team that had Stamkos and Tavares and Delzato and all these. You find that odd team that has a, you know, a stacked team. But for the most part, a team maybe has one guy who will make it. The main thing about playing hockey is growing as a person. And I know I'm getting deep and philosophical, and maybe that's just me being older and having kids, but I think of time wasted. And these kids, we consistently push them. And we're trying to, I think, live through them as parents. And you want the best for them, don't get me wrong. But is the best for them to be pushing them and changing their situation and going from team to team to team? Because I was talking to my agent in Minnesota, and Ben, he's like, yeah, these guys, every year they change teams because they want to be in the best situation. They want to have the best teammates. They want to have the most points. They want to have the best coach. They want to have this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, is that allowed? He's like, oh yeah. These family advisors, they find them situations. They talk to coaches and they say, okay, I got this guy. If I bring him in, can you promise me this much minutes and first power play time and all this stuff that goes along with it? And oh yeah, okay, well, then they change their teams. At what point do you have to sit back and think, is this good for the children? Is this good for the kids? Because at the end of the day, they are kids. They are little kids. And I'm fairly passionate about this because I've seen so many kids and so many parents ruin what would have been just a really fruitful, just really good situation for a kid. And they just throw it down the drain because they think their kid is the one and they're going to make the NHL and they're going to do this, that, and the other thing. And then you ruin your kid for life because you go to a team and you expect to have, you know, this outcome and it doesn't happen. And maybe the parent blames the kid. Maybe the kid blames the parent. Maybe the coaches get blamed and everybody's just throwing blame around and everybody's angry and everybody's upset and resentment sets in and then hatred sets in. And then all of a sudden you end up hating hockey all because you got greedy and you wanted to go to a different team to have a better situation. And I don't know what the end game is, but I think you have to put parameters on these things to protect these kids because parents have gotten out of control. I just did a random search and I was just wondering how much it costs to have the average AAA, you know, kid in 1 year. And it's anywhere from $20,000 to $40,000. When you kind of build in the hotels and the equipment and the travel and billeting and showcases and skill coaches and private sessions and all this other thing that goes along with being a hockey player these days. Like that's a full-time job. That's a blue-collar salary. $42,000, $40,000. Like, that's insane to me. I would not have been able to play hockey if that was the cost of playing hockey when I was a kid. And I know my dad stretched our dollar pretty thin to get me to play hockey. My dad was a construction worker. He didn't make nothing. You know, we lived with my grandma until I was 7 or 8 because we didn't have two nickels to rub together to buy a house. So if he were to go to the rink and the organization would say, yeah, you know what? We're going to need $20,000 up front. Then we're going to have to stay at this certain hotel for this trip and that certain hotel for that trip. And we're going to need you to buy this jersey and that jersey. And we're going to need you to go to these private skills coaches. And then we got to go to this showcase. And we got to all of these things. I would have never played hockey. I would have never played hockey. And it's sad. It's sad to think how many kids these days just can't afford it. And it just rolls right back to when I was going into that parking lot. It's like, do regular parents and regular kids have a chance anymore? Does a parent who has just a normal 9-to-5, the husband and wife work, and they're trying to, you know, make an ends meet, things are going okay, can you put your kid into a hockey program other than, you know, the local rec league, which there's nothing wrong with that, the local Kiwanis league? I don't think you can. There's no way. If you want to somehow have your kid progress in hockey, because if you're not getting 24/7, 365 days coaching and camps and equipment and online training and mental training and all this crap that is tied with hockey, you have no chance unless you're like this out of this world talent and you just all of a sudden break down all the doors and people want to help you because they're so good. And it really rubs me the wrong way. It really, really does. And I don't know what the answer is. There's a kid who I know in town here in Traverse City. I'm good friends with his parents. Well, not really good friends. I'm good friends with people who know his parents. And his parents live in Montana. And their kid plays goalie. And they wanted their kid to get a chance to go play college somewhere. And so I had a little sit down with them because they respect my opinion. And they said, hey, what would you say? And their kid's 15 years old. And they said, what would you want to do? You know, little, whatever, I'm not going to use his real name. Little Bobby really wants to play NCAA, but he's not getting any sniffs in Montana. I was like, okay, well, what do you think you should do? And they said, well, we're thinking about sending him A, to a junior team in Canada, or B, sending him to Michigan. He can, you know, live there and play in a local high school team. Or C, he just stays at home and that's what he does. Lives with his parents. And I said, C, 100%. Like, do not send this kid away at 15 years old to go play somewhere else. And just a hope on a prayer that he's going to make it in hockey. Because I've seen the kid play. He's good. But, you know, they don't listen to me. They send him to a high school in Michigan. Lo and behold, he becomes the pseudo backup. He starts, you know, I think every third game, plays out his junior and senior year, and that's it. And so, you know, great. He moved to Traverse City, played some hockey, but you didn't live with your parents when you were 16 and 17 years old. Very formative years. You were outside of their purview. And this happens all the time. And maybe I'm just screaming into the wind and no one's really listening, but I do want to stress how important it is to not fall for this trap. There's no need to pay $30,000 a year to play AAA hockey. The outcome is not, like, in my opinion, it's a waste of money. And I'm sorry. Maybe there are some kids listening and they want to make the NHL, but there's more to life than hockey. And I think with all the pressure that players are under now and all the pressure parents are under, you know, you don't want to be the parent who doesn't give your kid that stick. You don't want to be the parent who doesn't do that camp for their kid because you don't love them enough. And then you end up and you're like super in debt and your kid's just sitting there and you end up resenting him because you put so much money and effort into this kid and nothing came from it. I don't know. Maybe I'm a Debbie Downer, but I err on the side of being realistic and I err on the side of just building a child's just character, and the amount of money and the amount of time you can pour into that goes absolutely nowhere. So to all the people who, you know, are scouting kids at 13, spending thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars, I don't want to say shame on you because you're just playing the game. And if you don't, your kids don't play hockey. But at what point do we just have to stop? And I know it'll never stop because, you know, money talks. But are we really developing a culture of hockey that we like? Do you feel enriched when you go to the game? Do you feel like you're helping your kid be a better man or a woman? You know, build those friendships and build that type of integrity and bonds that you built when you were a kid, when you were playing sports. I don't think we are. You're teaching your kids to be selfish and cutthroat and to look out for themselves and always try to maybe sewer the kid next to them because they want to try to jump ahead of them in the pecking order. Because everything's a damn competition and everybody's got to be number one and everybody's got to get the scout to look at them. And if that means, you know, throwing your friend under the bus, so be it. So you don't build those relationships. And your hockey career is based on just this negative energy and this me versus the world. And I'm not going to pass. And I'm not going to be a good player. And I'm not going to be a good teammate. As long as I do better than you. As long as I score that goal. And it's already trickling into the NHL. You see players these days, and they don't know how to play the game. Because back when I played, you played, and I know this is cliche, but you played to win. You didn't play for personal stats. There was never once when I left a game after a loss and I went, phew, I played pretty good. Glad I played good. I don't care if we lost. And there was never once I left the game after win going, oh, you know, Bill scored two and I only got one. I'm so mad. I want to be the best player. That wasn't a thing back in the day. And maybe I have rose-colored glasses on looking at the past, but I firmly believe that. If we won, that was good. If we lost, that was bad. Nowadays, I don't even think the win-loss matters. And that's seeped into the NHL game. And you can see it in the playoffs. That's when it's the most glaring. In the regular season, it kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Everybody's, you know, blinded by the goals and the scores and the different amounts of games. But come playoff time and you can nail in and focus in on each individual game and you have matchups and you have players and you really lock in on what it takes to win a game. That's when these little cracks start to show and you go, geez, like, okay, like he doesn't know how to win. He doesn't know what it takes to win because his whole life he's been told, I just need to score points and that's all that matters. Like a guy like Austin Matthews, all he knows is how to score points. He doesn't know what it takes to win. And this crop of kids, and I'm even lumping in Connor McDavid into this equation. He doesn't know how to win. He knows how to have individual success. He knows how to score a ton of points. He doesn't know how to win in certain times of the game. Maybe don't make that pass. Maybe don't make that play. Even in the Olympics, it was 3-on-3 for Pete's sake. He tries an end-to-end rush. and gets stuffed. Instead of working his ass back, backtracking, he just kind of stops around the net. Next thing you know, Werenski picks up the puck, gives it over to Jack Hughes, game over. And McDavid's still behind the play. The fastest player to ever play the game. Didn't backcheck. Because he burnt himself out trying to go 1-on-3. And he almost scored, and great, if it would have scored, it would have been fantastic. He would have had parades, banners, statues, Connor McDavid, the golden goal. He sacrificed offense. He sacrificed defense for offense, and then Canada loses the gold medal. Because he doesn't know how to win. And how many times in their playoff runs did he have turnovers that counted against him when Florida went down and scored the other way? And I know he had to score goals, but they didn't have the depth. Did he? Did he need to do that? And he's just one of many. When you look at crunch time and you try to figure out who you can trust, it's never the young crop of players. It's always either, you know, like a Stahl for the Carolina Hurricanes, the Jordan Martinuk. Those guys stood out in Carolina's run. It's like, shit, those guys know how to win. Those guys know how to play the game. And then in Vegas, you could tell they didn't know how to win. They didn't know how to play the game. They were the hell of a good team. But I think the art of just being a hockey player, the art of what it takes to win, the art of playing as a team for the team, and the cliche, oh, I play for the, you know, the crest on the front, not the name on the back. There's something to that, you guys. And I think that's gone. And I think we killed it as parents. We want the best for our kids, and we think we're doing what's best for our kids. But in the end, we're killing them, man. We're creating these little narcissistic animals that just think everything revolves around them. And it doesn't. And I deal with it, my kids, all the time. I fight it all the time. They think they're better than my wife. They think they're my wife. My wife had a great talk with me last night. She's like, I need your help. The kids, they think like they have a higher place than I do. And I go, okay, I'll try to take care of that. Because you want to pour everything you have into these kids. And at the end of the day, you do that and it's bad. It's very strange to think that way. But I don't know. Maybe I should get off my soapbox. But I see it. And it's annoying. And I wish I knew how to change it. And I wish I could go to all the Canadian organizations, Hockey Canada, and say, no more allowing kids to change programs. I wish I could go to Minnesota and USA Hockey and say, no. You play in the territory where you play. Because how good was it back in the day? When you would get a good class of kids, and you go, damn, okay. Like, those kids are good. Like, oh, that Welland kid, that Welland team from Welland, Ontario, they're going to be good for the next 8 to 10 years. That's going to be fun. And then if you're the surrounding cities, you're like, okay, we will do everything we can to beat that team. And yes, it's tough. And yes, we lose a lot. But when we do, man, that's going to be sweet. That's going to be really, really fun. Or you can do what we do now. And then you go, oh, that Welland team's pretty good. I'm gonna join the Welland team. I'm going to go play with those guys. Sorry, Fort Erie. Sorry, St. Catharines and Niagara Falls. All the teams in the Golden Horseshoe. Suck it. I'm going to Welland. And we're going to make them even stronger. That's what we do. If you can't beat them, join them. That's the adage of today. Nobody wants to lose for a while, to learn, to get some cuts and bruises and come back stronger. That's not how we're built. I think we need to really, really think about if we're doing this the right way. Because I don't think we are. I think you see it in the NHL. I think you see the type of player. That's why when you get these 200-foot players who play like a Macklin Celebrini, everyone's like, man, this guy's special. This guy's really, look at how hard he tries, even in his own zone. It's like everybody used to play like that, you guys. Everybody used to play like that. And if you didn't, you wouldn't play. But now it's a revelation. Now he's the next, you know, the second coming. He's amazing. It's like, no, that's just how it was. And it's not anymore. So when you see it now, it's very, very special. Back in the day, it was a dime a dozen. Not that I'm saying I'm super old, but. Yeah, it's tough to see. Anyways, everybody, I will get off my soapbox. I appreciate the support. I had a great trip in Minnesota. Happy to be back in Traverse City in Michigan. I'm going to talk to Sandy McCarthy next week. I'm going to try to sneak in another episode this week. I don't know if I will. I'm swimming in Lake Michigan, having some fun, cutting loose a little bit with the family before school starts. All that aside, I appreciate the support. I hope everybody's enjoying their last breaths of summer before fall, school, everything starts up again. So I appreciate it once again. Have a good rest of your August, and I'll talk to you later. Cheers.